Near the end of Jesus's ministry here on earth, he was asked two questions, and his answer to those two questions have fascinated people for the last 2,000 years. Even today, some are still obsessed and interested in Jesus's answer to these two questions. And the two questions were, what will be the end of the age and when will it happen? These are questions about the future. You know, one of the great things about God is the only one who knows the future. And so there are times in the Bible when God says, hey, look, you want to know what's a true God and what's a false God? Let him predict the future. And you can search in vain for people making accurate predictions about the future except for the one true God. And so Jesus is asked the question, how's the age going to end? And when is that going to happen? And this morning we have the opportunity to hear Jesus' response to those two questions. So let me invite you to take a Bible and turn to the book of Matthew chapter 24. Matthew 24, it's page 805 and then 806 in the Bibles that the church provides. One of the reasons we provide these Bibles is because we don't want you just to sort of listen. We want you to see the written answers to these questions. Jesus was asked two very important questions. How's the age going to end and when? And I find those to be rather interesting questions. And so we want to look together at what Jesus says in response to that. Now, to set the kind of scene, the timing of this discussion, when Jesus is asked these two questions, is in the last week before the crucifixion, probably Tuesday. So Jesus will be crucified on Good Friday, raised again on Easter Sunday. These questions probably happen the Tuesday of that week. That's the time Matthew gives us the physical setting, beginning in verse 1. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came to him to call his attention to its buildings. Do you see all these things? He asked. Truly I tell you, not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down. The disciples are at the temple. They're like, man, this is a pretty fantastic building. And Jesus says, I'm telling you, this temple is going to be destroyed. Not one stone will be left on another. That happened in AD 70. We talked about it in connection with Matthew 21. But when the disciples hear that the temple is going to be destroyed, that feels like an apocalyptic type event. And so that prompts them to ask two questions. Verse 3, as Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. Tell us, they said, when will this happen and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? Here are two questions. The disciples want to know, when is the end of the age coming and what's going to happen? Now, these are pretty straightforward questions. When and what? And what you're going to see is I think Jesus actually gives a pretty straightforward response. It is true that later on in this same chapter, Jesus is going to say, no one knows the specific day. That information has been reserved and only God the Father has access to that information. But when Jesus is asked these two questions, before he says no one knows the exact day, he's going to give an answer in which he basically sets out, here's what's going to happen. And a pretty straightforward question, two questions, gets pretty straightforward answers. As Jesus gives these answers, what he basically says is, this is going to happen, and then this is going to happen, and then this is going to happen. And while he's asked two questions kind of at the same time, what and when, Jesus answers kind of both questions at the same time. He talks about the what and when of this, the what and when of this, and the what of when of this. And so throughout, he gives us sort of a framework for what's coming for the end of the age. We want to look at that today. Jesus lays it out with three parts. We begin with the first section, which is verses 4 to 14 of Matthew chapter 24. And I've got some pictures on the screen that are going to help us just kind of keep track of where we're at. We call this section the now section. And what I mean by that is Jesus is talking about the first era in the future is the one we're in right now. Now, 2,000 years ago, he was talking to his disciples. They're in the same era we're in. So although it's been 2,000 years, verses 4 to 14 of our chapter are talking about now, what we're experiencing. They were at the very beginning of this era. We're probably pretty close to the end of this era. But Peter, James, John, and the other disciples who are hearing Jesus' response in Matthew 24, and you and I today who are hearing Jesus' response, this is the era that we're living in. It's described for us beginning in verse 4. Jesus answered, "Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name claiming I am the Messiah and will deceive many." The first feature of the era in which we live, and also the era in which they were living, is that there will be, what Jesus says, many false messiahs. This doesn't mean there will be many people who come and claim they are Jesus. What this means is that there will be many people who claim they are doing similar things to what Jesus was doing, meaning Jesus came to rescue us and to help us. And he says one of the characteristics of the era in which we live is that there will be people who are claiming to help, to fix things, that they have the answers to our problems. So for example, in the second century, just maybe 100 years after this, there was a man named Bar Kokhba, a Jewish man, who came and said he was the Messiah. And he was coming to help the Jewish people. Even today, we talked last week about Elon Musk. He doesn't think he's Jesus, but he thinks he's rescuing us from destroying our planet and helping us colonize Mars. He thinks it's his job to save the human race. Barack Obama, Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, even companies like OpenAI, none of them are claiming to be Jesus. But in many cases, you have people who think we're here to rescue people from things. That's what Jesus came to do. And he says one of the characteristics of our era is there's going to be a lot of people who claim they are here to fix things. He goes on, verse 6. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. The last century saw two great world wars, and lots of people thought these were the wars to sort of end all wars. And Jesus says, yes, those are big wars, but that's not the end. Even today, when we look around, we see that there's war currently going on in Ukraine. There's war in Israel. There's war in Ethiopia, in Yemen, in Azerbaijan, in Armenia. There's war going on in the Sahel region of Africa, Myanmar. There is war happening around the world. It might feel like the end has come, but Jesus says, no, that's simply part of the now era. Don't be surprised that there are wars going on. This is part of where we're living, and so it is today. Verse 7, nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. In 2023, it's estimated that 333 million people faced food insecurity in the world. It is predicted in that same Sahel region of Africa, in which such difficult things are going, that there's going to be a massive famine because of all the things that are taking place. Jesus says that's part of what's happening. Earthquakes and famines, that's going to be part of the era in which we're living. Verse 8, all these are the beginning of birth pains. That's again how I know that these verses 4 to 14 are not talking about the end. They're talking about the era that we're in. Jesus says this is just the beginning. He's going to lay out for us these three sections that go to the answer to the question of when will the end come. We're in the first section, and Jesus says this is just the beginning. We're just in the start. Verse 9, then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you will be hated by all nations because of me. One organization says that in 2023, about 5,600 Christians were martyred for their faith. 2,100 churches, it was estimated, were attacked in 2023. And 124,000 Christians were forcibly displaced from their home because of their faith in Jesus. That's what Jesus says. There's going to be persecution. It's a feature of the era in which we live. Verse 10, at that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. We feel that here in North America. You can feel it in Europe. There's lots of deconstruction of people's Christian faith. There's lots of people who may have grown up in Christian circles who have decided they want nothing to do with that and turned their backs on those sorts of things. Jesus says that's going to be a feature of the era in which we find ourselves, and we experience that today. Verse 11, and many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. We've had false prophets in the last however many hundred years. False prophets recently talking about sexuality and gender in ways that are not pleasing to the Lord. We've had false prophets saying it's okay to discriminate or to be racist towards other people. We've had false prophets say, yeah, it's all right to be abusive towards women. We've had false prophets say all sorts of things about how the creation of the world took place. Jesus says that's going to be part of what's going on now. There are going to be people teaching things that are wrong. Verse 12, because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. Certainly you and I feel this and see this. We look around and we see all the online gambling and you see internet pornography. You see the hatred that's going on and the lack of forgiveness that people have towards one another. You see the rampant sort of drug use. You see the technology that people are using and how all of this is causing people's hearts to be drawn away from God and from others. Instead of loving God and loving others, we're simply loving ourselves. And you can feel the love of most growing cold. Jesus says that's going to happen. Verse 13, there's also some good news about some things that are going to happen in the era in which we're living. But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. Jesus says, in the midst of all of this trouble, there's going to be people still standing firm till the end. And guess what? He's right. I'm looking at some of them. And even though you can look around and see the love of most will grow cold, Jesus says, but I know and I'm telling you, there will be people in 2024 who are standing firm to the end. There's more good news in verse 14. It actually explains why Jesus is willing to put up with all the bad stuff going on in our era. And the gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. One organization estimates that of the 8 billion people on the planet, 4.6 billion have the gospel available to them in some sort of tangible way. That doesn't mean 4.6 billion people are Christians, but they have access to the gospel. That's what Jesus is talking about. Of the 17,000 plus people groups in the world, 10,000 plus have the gospel available to them in some sort of meaningful or tangible way. That's what Jesus is saying. The good news is part of this era. Why is God putting up with all of these famines and all of this war and all of this persecution? Because he wants people to be saved. And so Jesus says, during the era in which we live. Now imagine, he's saying it to 12 guys sitting there on the Mount of Olives, and he's telling them the gospel's gonna go to the whole world. And we look around and go, he's doing what he said was gonna do. This is happening. Now look at the phrase at the end of verse 14. And then the end will come. So verses 4 to 14 are not the end. The question was, what's going to happen at the end of the age, and when's that going to happen? And Jesus is giving a pretty straightforward answer. He says, okay, well, first of all, you're going to have a long extended period from verses 4 to 14, and these things are going to happen. When that's done, then the end starts. And so that leads us to the next section in verses 15 to 28. So we have the now. What's coming is in verses 15 to 28. Look with me as I read verses 15 to 21. Jesus says, so when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the housetop go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one in the field go back to get their cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath, for then there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, and never to be equaled again. Do you see in verse 21 that little phrase, great distress? The Greek word that's translated distress is often translated tribulation. This is where we get the name for the next phase that's coming. So we live in the now phase of what's going on. Jesus says at some point there is going to come the next phase. The end will start with what is known as the great distress or the great tribulation. And the idea is while there's all sorts of difficult things happening now in verses 4 to 14, Jesus says, yeah, but the next phase, that's going to be worse than anything that has ever happened in the history of the universe. And so it's labeled the great distress or the great tribulation. Jesus says, look, if you want to understand more about this, it's in the book of Daniel. And so the Old Testament book of Daniel talks a lot about this. It gives us more information. Jesus doesn't go through all of that. And so Matthew just simply says, let the reader understand. If you want to know what's going on, you got to go back to the book of Daniel. In the book of Daniel, you find out that this great tribulation lasts 7 years. Daniel tells us a little bit more about what's going to be going on during those 7 years. But Jesus highlights one very important aspect of this second era. He says it's going to be characterized by what's known as the abomination that causes desolation. That's a phrase from the book of Daniel, and it's referring to a person that 1 John calls the Antichrist, with a capital A. It's the same person that Paul refers to in 2 Thessalonians as the man of lawlessness, the same person that Revelation 13 refers to as the beast. Whereas in our era, there have been false messiahs and false prophets, what will be characteristic of the great tribulation is there will be one satanically empowered figure who will displace Jesus in the hearts and minds of many people. He will claim to be the Christ, capital C, which makes him Antichrist. And Jesus says that's the feature of the great tribulation. So verses 4 to 14, this is the stuff that's going to be happening now. Then comes the next section, which is called the great distress or the great tribulation. The key feature is the Antichrist, the abomination that causes desolation, people worshiping this satanic figure instead of worshiping Jesus. And then we have the last section, verses 29 to 31. Immediately after the distress of those days. So we've got the now, we've got the great tribulation, and then starting in verse 29, the last section to what's coming in the future. Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Then will appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then all the peoples of the earth will mourn when they see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. The last event is the return of Jesus. That Jesus will come back as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and after the great tribulation, Jesus will make all things right. Remember, he's talking to his disciples on the week of Holy Week. It's Tuesday. On Friday, he'll be crucified. On Sunday, he'll be raised from the dead. Sometime after that, he will ascend to heaven, and his last words are, I'm coming back. And so it's no surprise that during his last week, he teaches his disciples, this is what's going to happen in the future. It's a pretty straightforward question. What's going to happen and when? And Jesus gives a pretty straightforward answer. This is going to happen and all this stuff. Then this is going to happen and this stuff. And then this is going to happen and I'm going to return. Straightforward question. Straightforward answer. Now the question for us to say is, what are we going to do with this? This is interesting, hopefully. I think if anyone asks you, well, what's going to happen in the future, this is a pretty straightforward, here's what's going to happen. We got this here, we got that here, we got this. But what should you and I do with this information today? Three thoughts about why I think Jesus wants us to pay close attention to what he's saying to us this morning. The first comes out of verses 32 to 35. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. Truly I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. This is the perfect time of year for us to be studying this passage. Because this is the exact same time of year that Jesus was teaching this material. And what we see when we go outside today is exactly what Jesus saw when he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, namely trees that are beginning to bud. Have you noticed? Have you noticed the greenery? This is the exact time of year. And so Jesus is looking around, and yes, different trees than we've got here. But he says to the disciples, you see these trees? Do you see the buds? You see the leaves beginning to come? That is a guarantee that summer is coming. Now, it's still spring. Spring is not the same as summer. But spring is the sign that summer is coming. How many of you have already gotten sort of your lawnmower ready or made plans for your lawn or for your garden or those sorts of things? Yes, we did too. That's because when spring arrives, you better be ready for summer. Summer is coming. Jesus used a different metaphor a little bit earlier. He talked about birth pains. Birth pains is not birth. I'm not speaking from personal experience. I'm speaking from observation. That for a woman who's pregnant, and some of you know how this feels, the idea is that you don't simply just have a baby. There are pains that begin, labor pains, and they are a sign the baby is coming. Birth pains is not birth. Spring is not summer. But both do the same thing. They're both proof that this event is going to happen. And Jesus is saying, look, pay attention. He says, I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Now, that sounds at first like he means all three stages are going to happen in one generation. We can testify confidently that that did not happen. But that's not what I think he means. What I think he means is talking about the now, all the things in verses 4 to 14 are going to happen in the disciples' lifetime. Meaning, they were going to experience false messiahs. They were going to experience the temple being destroyed. They would experience famine and earthquakes. They were going to experience persecution. They were going to experience the love of many growing cold. They were going to experience the gospel beginning to go out into all nations. That first generation got everything in verses 4 to 14. Why? As a sign to them, the rest is coming. We, 2,000 years later, can affirm even more that all those things have been coming generation after generation after generation. And the point is, we're even more on the hook than they were. Did we just go through all the stuff in verses 4 to 14? Do you see that happening in the world around us? Was Jesus telling the truth? Look, it takes a lot of courage to predict the future. This is why you can look around and you will not find a lot of very specific predictions about the future. Imagine Jesus telling these 12 disciples, yes, the gospel's gonna go into the whole world, even places they'd never even heard of before. Jesus says all these things are going to happen. And if he's telling the truth about that, then he's telling the truth about the rest of it. And the point to you and I, and this is kind of the first application to take away from this, is if you read verses 4 to 14, and you look back through history, and you look around today, and you see wars, and you see persecution, and you see famine, and you see false messiahs, people who think that they can rescue us from the things going on, if you see false prophets, if you look and see those things, then know for sure summer is coming. We've experienced birth pains. I mean, if you're pregnant right now, I promise you are thinking about what you're gonna do when that baby comes. You're gonna get the room ready. I promise most of you who are interested in summer are already making plans for what you're going to do this summer. It's spring, summer is coming. Jesus is saying, pay attention. If the things in the now era are happening, get ready. I'm coming back. And maybe you've had a season where kind of summer snuck up on you and you're like, well, I didn't get any of the stuff ready that I wanted. And you kind of like, man, summer didn't go as well as I would have liked it to go on. Maybe if you're pregnant and you just don't have time to think about a child or anything, I don't know how that's possible, but you would regret not being ready. Jesus' point is, I'm telling you all of this now, ahead of time, so that you and I can be ready. It would be really, really foolish to be all prepared for a baby to arrive, to be all prepared for summer to arrive, and to not be prepared for Jesus to arrive. So that's the first point. The second application for us today is that Jesus tells us all of this stuff so that we can have hope in the midst of trouble. A few weeks ago, I went back and rewatched the college football playoff semifinal game between the University of Michigan and the University of Alabama. I will say it was much less stressful watching it this time around. When Michigan missed an extra point, it's not that big a deal. When they were down by 7 with 4:41 to play, I didn't stress out about it. When it went to overtime, I was not that worried. Why? Because I already knew how it was going to turn out. Jesus is telling us all of the stuff because in the middle of the now era that we're in, there's some hard things. War is difficult. You pick up the news and you look around and it's easy to feel shaken. You see people who are sort of promising that they're gonna fix the world by using artificial intelligence or technology. And if you know in the back of your head, this isn't gonna go well. It's easy to get nervous. You see famine and war and you see all of the difficulties, earthquakes and all of the stuff that's happening. You see persecution. You look at family members whose hearts may be growing cold towards Jesus. You live in a society in which you're like, this isn't going that well. It's disturbing, but not overwhelming because we know how the story ends. Jesus says, this stuff's not just happening by accident. I told you 2,000 years before, this is the plan. Don't be afraid. There's nothing that's gonna show up in the news that's gonna change this. The third application is tied to communion. See, I think these two passages, Matthew 24 and Matthew 26, are tied together. They both happen the same week. So on Tuesday, Jesus does this teaching with the disciples. On Thursday, he's going to sit down with them and he's going to institute this ceremony that we've been doing for the last 2,000 years. So while all of the things in verses 4 to 14 have been happening in the world around us, Jesus' church has been celebrating this event from that same week over and over and over again for a very specific reason. You see, on that Thursday, Jesus basically said to his disciples, something really bad is gonna happen, and you're gonna think that all is lost. But after that, something really great is going to happen. And you're gonna have to believe me through the bad stuff and have hope that the good stuff is coming. And what he means is that the next day on Good Friday, Jesus would be crucified, and it would seem like the world had ended to those disciples. But Jesus says, in 3 days, I will be raised again, and your sadness will turn to joy. Communion is the reminder that we need to choose to have faith in Jesus, that as we go through difficult things, there is hope coming at the end. And that what happened in that compressed 1 week period of time is what's happening now over millennia. We are going through hard times, but the promise is Good Friday will yield to Easter Sunday. And communion is the reminder that the two millennia we've had of the now, the wars, the rumors of wars, the famines, the earthquakes, all of that stuff, will give way to joy when Jesus returns. And please understand this when I mean this. As happy as the resurrection was, when Jesus returns, it will be far more joyful. As difficult as the crucifixion was for the early disciples, what we've been doing for the last 2,000 years has in some ways been harder because it goes on and on and on. But the reason why Jesus is letting it go on and on and on is because, number one, what's coming is so far better than what we're having to endure. And number two, he's letting it go on for the same reason he was crucified, so that the world would be saved. The crucifixion was the event. The 2,000 years is the chance to tell people about it. And the reminder of communion is, for you and I today, given all of this, what we hold in our hands is an encouragement to be the people who stand firm to the end, and to be those people who are sharing the gospel in the whole world. In your neighborhood, at your workplace, with your family, with your friends. I mean, God hates war. God hates famine. God hates persecution. God hates the love of most growing cold. God hates false prophets. God hates false men. Why is he putting up with all this stuff? Because there's still people who don't know. There's still 3.6 billion people who don't have any idea what the gospel is. There's still 7,000 people groups who have no tangible access to the gospel. There's still people in your neighborhood who don't know Jesus. And so as we take communion this morning, this is a reminder. We're living in difficult times, but hope is coming. We go through the difficult times because Jesus loves the world and wants the world to be saved. We do our part during this, stand firm to the end, tell others about Jesus. We leave the rest of this up to Jesus, and he will take care of it. In just a minute, we're going to have communion distributed through trays, and so there's some people that are gonna help us if they would go in the back and they're gonna get the communion trays. What's gonna happen is that, yes, there'll be trays passed, and in those trays is a double stacked cup, and the bottom of that cup is a little piece of bread, and on the top cup is a little bit of juice. If you are a believer in Jesus, we are celebrating all of this today. And so we ask you just take one of those double stack cups. Hold on to it. I'm gonna get back up and explain what we'll do as we do it together. If you're not yet a believer in Jesus, let me at least make this plea to you. Did you hear the stuff he said would be happening? Do you see it happening? Can you find anyone else in the history of the world who has the kind of courage to make a specific prediction about the future that 2,000 years later you can still read and say, yep, 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 happening, happening, happening? You might say, well, it's kind of generic. He just says bad things will happen. Do you know how many things could have gone wrong where this wouldn't have turned out? He's very specific. The temple is going to get torn down. It happened in AD 70. He's like, that's just the first sign. If you look at this, then know that only God can say these things. And if all of the stuff in verses 4 to 14 is happening, you can be pretty sure the rest of it's gonna happen too. And so the encouragement is today, you got a choice as to where to place your faith. You can place your faith in Elon Musk. You can place your faith in Barack Obama or Donald Trump or Vladimir Putin or in OpenAI or in Microsoft or in Silicon Valley. You can place your faith in business. You can place your faith in Wall Street. You can place your faith in your own ability to do things. You can place your faith in the people around you. You can place your faith in West Michigan. Or you can put your faith in Jesus. He is the one who is going to rescue us. Colonizing Mars is not going to be how we get rescued. Jesus is going to rescue us.